Another wave of Cubans?
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Cuba's government says Fidel Castro is in stable condition this morning, but many Cuban Americans believe he's on his deathbed, and quite frankly, they're ready to celebrate. But if Castro dies, there could be another exodus of Cubans to Miami. The question is, can the city handle it? From the America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch reports.
During the 1980 Mariel boat lift, 125,000 Cubans landed in Miami. They were given shelter, food, and medical care at a cost of $100 million to the local and state governments. DePaul University historian Felix Masud Piloto estimates 1 to 2 million people now living in Cuba would also like to come to Miami. And he says history shows these newcomers would be a good investment.
The Mariel boat lift was quite positive to Miami. What the country gave out at that moment in time to bring him in and feed him for the time that they were in retention paid for itself.
Marielitos, as they're called, now earn on average above $30,000, $10,000 more than the average Miami resident. In 1994, 50,000 refugees fled Cuba on rafts. Most quickly became part of Miami's economic landscape. Experts believe any new wave would be equally assimilated. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Inflation numbers and some disappointing earnings were a drag on Wall Street. The Dow lost 0.5% to 11,125. The NASDAQ dropped almost 1.5% to 2061. The big story there was Whole Foods. Shares fell almost 12% after a droopy sales report. If there's one internet company that just can't seem to get it right, it's AOL. The company's losing customers by the thousands. So today, AOL announces its fourth turnaround plan in 5 years. This time, the company wants to scrap its subscription-based model and give people stuff for free. More now from Amy Scott.
The plan to offer free service seems counterintuitive. Subscriptions drive 80% of AOL's revenue, but AOL is losing that revenue anyway as customers flock to free services like Yahoo, Google, and MSN. AOL plans to make up the lost revenue by selling more advertising. Media analyst Porter Bibb says the company still boasts more than 18 million subscribers.
That is a critical mass of eyeballs, but for the last 5 years or so, they have not demonstrated any great ability to crack Madison Avenue.
Reports say AOL will still charge for dial-up internet access, but won't advertise the service, which means your mailbox may have seen the last of those promotional CDs. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
If you work for tips, listen up. Folks in Congress are debating a minimum wage bill, and they're trying to figure out what to do about tips. 7 states allow waiters and bartenders to keep their tips on top of their minimum wage pay, but the House bill would nix those laws and give workers a pay cut. Labor groups say thousands of people would make $3 less an hour because of this. This is Marketplace. Orange juice is a commodity just like sugar or coffee. It's traded on a futures exchange. Yesterday, orange juice futures closed at their highest level in 15 years. Ashley Milne-Tite explains why.
An orange juice futures contract is an agreement to buy or sell frozen OJ at a predetermined price in the future. The idea is to minimize risk that comes with a volatile natural product. Jeanette Young works on the floor at the New York Board of Trade. She says supply is already tight because of the damage caused by last year's hurricanes, so news of a tropical storm brewing in the Caribbean has spread some panic.
People are really afraid of what could happen because they were burned last year. They are very cautious. The appearance of a storm just sends fear down a trader's back.
Also contributing to the price spike, worries of a possible drought in Brazil, the world's biggest producer of frozen orange juice. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Which comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Microsoft Dynamics. Business solutions for CRM, supply chain, and financial management. Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics. And by Reuters. Reporting from around the world, every day, every hour, every second. Reuters helps you stay in the know now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. It's that time of year when some states hold tax holidays. The idea is to give back to school shoppers an incentive. But commentator Robert Reich says people could be getting much less than they deserve.
Retail sales are lagging. No surprise. Consumers are paying through their collective noses for gas, groceries, and health insurance. Paychecks for all but the wealthiest are still stagnant. Retailers are howling, and politicians are listening. The latest gimmick is to proclaim holidays on state sales taxes, particular days when consumers can buy up a storm without paying the extra 4, 5, or 6% sales tax that's normally added on. Consumers say they love the tax holidays. Retailers love them because they stimulate sales. But there's no evidence the holidays stimulate more sales over the long term. Consumers just spend less other days. Besides, there's no such thing as a free tax holiday. Revenue lost to state governments on tax holidays has to be made up some other way, or else services have to be cut. The curious thing is why states continue to tax sales at all, any day. Sales taxes are among the most regressive forms of taxation. Consumers with moderate or low incomes have to sacrifice much larger portions of their incomes on sales taxes than do wealthy consumers. It would be fairer to abolish sales taxes altogether and have governments rely more on progressive graduated income taxes. Yet, over the past 10 years, sales taxes have gone up, notwithstanding the occasional tax holiday, while other taxes at the state and federal level have become less progressive. Why? First and most obviously, as the rich get richer, they also get more politically powerful. That's why, for example, a handful of super wealthy families are able to finance the current campaign to end the federal estate tax, which, if they're successful, will reap them a bonanza. But it's also true, according to polls, that even lower-income people would rather pay sales taxes than income taxes. Although sales taxes end up costing them more, most people feel that sales taxes are less coercive than income taxes. The psychological plus of a sales tax is you decide yourself how much you're going to buy, and hence how much you'll be taxed. Other forms of taxes hit you regardless of your personal choices. And so when a tax holiday is declared and you run to the mall and spend like a drunken sailor, it feels like you're exercising the ultimate choice, getting a great deal. Even if you can't afford it, even if your wages stink, even if the whole tax system is stacked against you.
Robert Reich is the former Secretary of Labor. Now he's teaching public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. You can share your thoughts with us, as always. Log on to our website, marketplace.org, and send us an email. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
It's a common complaint in the suburbs, but not so.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.